Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening. I would like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. It is Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. This is scan number 2872, and we have a great show tonight. The type of show is a survivor professional night. We have a very special guest who is a survivor professional. Her name is Felicia Johnson. I'll tell you a little bit more about Felicia in a few moments. But before I do, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Penelope Bennett, and I am a member, a proud member and board member of NASCA, and I am also an adult survivor of child abuse. With me on the line is Annie Marges. Annie is also a NASCA member. As well as Felicia. So we encourage you, before we start the show, this is an open mic forum tonight. We have a survivor professional to talk about topics related to intervention, prevention, recovery, and all different aspects of child abuse as adult survivors. We welcome you to join us. There's no experience necessary to be a member of the panel, just a willingness and a curiosity to participate. The number to call in, all you have to do is call in to the following number. It's area code 646-595-2118. Again, that number is area code 646-595-2118. And my co-host, Annie, will greet you on our back line and welcome you into the show. Before I bring on Felicia and talk to you about Felicia's background, I'd like to tell you a little bit more about NASCA, because as you know, and I mentioned, NASCA is all about child abuse, trauma, prevention, intervention, recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first goal, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts, showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, such as these radio shows, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, recovery. So please, if you're streaming now, if you're live streaming and you're sort of intrigued, maybe you're tempted to call in, but you're not sure because you haven't done it before, it's okay. We will help ease you into the show. You can just listen in for the first part if that's within your comfort level. All you have to do is dial the number, area code 646-595-2118, and Annie will meet you on the back line and greet you into the show. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about our survivor professional and about what tonight is all about. As I mentioned, we use an open mic forum, and our survivor professional, who's Felicia Johnson, we will field topics by you, the listener. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about Felicia Johnson. She's from Miami, Florida, and she has an incredible story of transformation. She was physically and sexually abused, taken from her family, and placed in foster care into a system where she would stay for 10 years. She emancipated out at age 16. She faced multiple hardships. However, Felicia refused to allow her past to dictate her future, so she pushed through the pain to embark on her own healing journey and began to see triumph in her trauma. "I am the survivor," she says. "At 7 years old, I was sexually molested by an uncle, physically abused by my stepfather, and labeled as a troubled child by my mother." Felicia became quite the advocate and activist. "I created, quote, Heal Your Foundation to help trauma survivors and to encourage at-risk youth to transition from their hurtful experiences to living and building a better life." So on our open mic survivor professional night, we welcome various co-hosts such as Felicia, survivor professionals who will assist in fielding questions and lead a variety of topics suggested by our call-in participants. As for Alicia, her trauma-informed perspective as a survivor professional will help all of us guide discussions on the issues of child abuse, trauma, and healthy human sexuality that spring from the question topics brought to us by our listeners. So everyone's invited to engage on tonight's show. Please visit the NASSCA.org website, which is NAASCA.org, to learn more. So without further ado, I wish to just welcome you to the show, and I'm so thrilled. Annie and I are so thrilled to have you on this evening.
Thank you, Penelope and Annie, for just having me on tonight. Thank you, NASSCA, for inviting me. I'm excited for tonight. I'm just thankful, and, you know, I'm always grateful just to have an opportunity to just bring hope to other survivors. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Felicia, I don't know if you remember, I'm sure that you do, but I was your host on the night that you told your story.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and wow, I was so inspired by the story and just how you, I mean, everything that you had described in your bio was so evident in your, you know, show as a special guest, not as a survivor professional. But I'm just so excited for the show tonight and to have you back and just to, you know, just to learn more from you and the topics that come up this evening. So I'm smiling. I don't know if you can see me through the phone lines, but
So I'm excited.
Me too. So I, you know, we don't have any additional callers on yet. Sometimes they come as the show progresses, and as you know, and I know you know because you've been on the show before, it's 90 minutes, but it does go by very quickly. And, you know, as the 90 minutes progresses, we do have more and more people, you know, calling. But before we have any additional callers, was there a topic specifically that you wanted to address tonight, or would you like to hear from Annie and myself?
I really just would love to get, I've been thinking about this question, and I would love to ask you and Annie, what were your thoughts about it? And so I've been doing, like, this series on social media, and so one of the things that I've been wanting to know and just different people's perspective, because I realize that a lot of us as survivors, we have a different perspective about, you know, letting go, forgiving and releasing and stuff like that. And so I'm going to, you know, share my little perspective, and then you guys, I would love to hear your perspective as well when it comes to, you know, releasing, forgiving, and, you know, letting go from some of the things that we've gone through. For me, I believe that, you know, forgiveness, letting go, and releasing is like it's a process, a whole process in itself, along with the healing journey. And, you know, I believe it's important but for to, you know, to tell, you know, a survivor initially or in the beginning of their journey to say, hey, you know, you should forgive or you should let go initially, I think it's a bad idea. Because, you know, we're already going through the, you know, the unseen, unheard. We just went through this horrible, traumatic experience. And to hear for us, for someone to say to us, oh, just release it or let it go or forgive, you don't know how fresh that wound is, or you don't know what happened to me for me to let it go. When I say that it's a process, just like our healing journey, I believe there is going to be a point in a time also in your journey where you're going to have to say, hey, I'm no longer going to allow what has happened to me or what they did to me to keep my life on pause or to destroy my life or to keep my life from moving forward. I'm going to reclaim my power back, and I'm going to say, hey, this is my life. You did some messed up stuff to me, but I am choosing now to rewrite my story, to rewrite the script, and you don't have that power no more. So I'm not, you know, saying what you did was right, but what I'm saying is you no longer have that power. So I'm going to have to let go in a sense. And I have to forgive, not forgive you for what you did, because you already know that you already did some hurtful stuff to me. But I'm forgiving that I at that moment of time that you had an advantage of me and it was not okay. But I am forgiving myself. I'm forgiving the anger that came along with it. I'm forgiving the depression that I may have, like I'm forgiving that and saying that it was okay for me to feel that way afterwards, but I'm not going to stay in that moment. So I would love to hear you and Penelope and Anna, your perspective when it comes to, you know, forgiving, releasing, and letting go.
Wow, and I think that's such a great topic. And that's such a great topic. And I always, when I think about just the topic of forgiveness when it comes to, you know, us, an adult survivor of child abuse, I call it a hot topic, because I know it can be a trigger. There are a lot of thoughts about it. There are a lot of different viewpoints on the topic. And you know, some of the things that you said really resonate with me and align with my thoughts on forgiveness. And I'll tell you that my thoughts on forgiveness evolved as well, and they've evolved as I continue on the healing process, and I'll be in recovery for life. So, first of all, I find that it is a process that is constantly evolving for me. And I think too, to your point, forgiveness is taken within context and how it's defined. And for me, part of forgiveness was to forgive those that hurt me as a child, the adults, the family members that were, you know, supposed to care for me and protect me. I had to, you know, be truthful about it. And the healing is like you have to bring it out and you have to acknowledge what actually happened. So part of me was I had to begin the process of forgiveness by actually naming and bringing out what there was, what happened, so that I could address it to forgive it. You know, I had to bring out all those repressed memories. I had to name them. You know, it's like you put a list of the things that happened so that you can work on them. And part of that, you know, so there's truth in forgiveness. You have to get about that truth. And that's where I think it is within context, because I think if anybody really, truly understands the truth of what happened, you can't tell someone to get over that. They understand the truth of what happened. It's not something you can just get over because of the severity of these heinous crimes that happen to children. It's not something you can just get over. It's a loss. It's a loss that we grieve. You never stop grieving over a loss. You might, you know, it ebbs and flows. So it's nothing you ever get over. You learn how to live with it in recovery and move forward. But I'm with you in that, you know, as children, we were invalidated too. We were invalidated a lot. So to tell someone to get over it also feels a little bit like invalidation, at least to me. So I think to your point, and just in terms of my thoughts, it is a process, but a lot of it for me in terms of the definition of forgiveness, it's actually also truth is in there. It's a very strong part of forgiveness and bringing out that truth and living the truth, reading the truth, and forgiving, forgiving the truth of the events, you know, of forgiving the events which are defined by the truth of what happened. And I had to forgive myself as well because I think a lot also bring up self-blame and self-hatred. So there's just so for me, the whole foot of forgiveness embodies so much of, you know, trauma recovery and adult survivor child abuse. So I know I've been talking for quite a while, but to answer your question, I align with a lot of the things that you said. And I feel like for me, forgiveness is a process that I have to continue to work on.
Yeah, Penelope, you know, there's not enough. You cannot talk enough for me. You know, I love your soothing voice. But you absolutely said, like, some powerful stuff because, like you said, I totally agree with you. There is truth in forgiveness. And for you to even, it really takes strength. And for you to even forgive, you do have to name it and bring it up, like you said. And forgiving yourself, I love that you said that because a lot of times we, as survivors, we kind of hold on and we hold on to the stuff that was done to us. We hold on to stuff that we've done to ourselves, mistakes we made, things that we didn't say, things that we should have done, or things that we couldn't do. We kind of hold on to that. So forgiving ourselves, I feel like, is so important. And then what you said about it's constantly evolving, I love that because it's so true. Like, I love it. Mm-hmm. Constantly evolving to forgive and to let go. Anna, I would love to hear from you your perspective about forgiving and letting go.
For me or for Annie? Yeah, from Annie.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm taking notes as always, and I wrote down what would be my list of people that I need to forgive for not protecting me, people who knew about it and didn't do anything about it. And all those people, my aunts and uncles, my grandparents, my mother, they all knew, but they didn't protect me. And they're all dead now, and they never asked me for forgiveness, and so I don't see any reason I should offer it. I think they need to suffer for not taking care of a child when they saw what was happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't forgive them. I don't forgive my father, who was my abuser, because he kept being abusive to me up until he died. He would say inappropriate things to me all the time. It was horrible.
Yeah.
And he never stopped, so what's to forgive?
Yeah.
If he's still alive, he'd still be doing it, right? So that's where I am on forgiveness. I forgive myself for beating up on myself for many years. I made my life very difficult with shame and guilt. And I forgive myself for that. But I don't forgive the people who hurt me.
Yeah.
I wanted to comment, too, on rewriting my story. Felicia, you said that. And I rewrote my story, and I gave it a different ending, and I got revenge in it. I just wanted to share that,
it.
You know. It's one way to work with your writing is to use it creatively to get, you know, a little cathartic release.
Yeah, I love it. And thank you for that. And I think that for just you saying forgiving yourself, it's that whole beautiful thing of for me, I think forgiving yourself and forgiving myself is like the most important because, you know, our abusers, they, like you said, like sometimes if they were still, you know, living or if they're still alive or whatever, you know, they really don't have no thought about us. And so we have to have a thought about ourselves. We have to think for us and love on us, because they are not thinking. They are going on living their best life, right? And so that's why I'm so big on, like, you know, being the best version for you, nobody else. Like, being what you want to be, and not being what they try to make you or try to break you to be. And so I commend you. I love you. I hear you, Annie. And I love that you got your revenge by rewriting this story. So I love it. Penelope, would you like to add anything?
Well, yeah, I would. I definitely think, you know, and I appreciate, you know, and I totally, you know, respect what Annie said. And I think, you know, forgiveness is a very personal thing. It is a very personal thing. And it's part of our healing process on how, you know, we, because we're also protecting ourselves. We're becoming the parents that we never had, right? For me.
Right.
And for me, part of forgiveness was, you know, I know my parents had their own pain. I know that they have their own pain, and I know that they, this is a cyclical, this was a multi-generational cycle that was, you know, something that was passed on to me. And I believe that in their maltreatment of the children and of themselves, there's a lot of self-abuse that I can now look back on my parents and observe. They couldn't forgive themselves. They projected all of that. And my nature, and I know this from the time I was, is a loving, forgiving, giving, never jealous kid. So for me, I forgave my parents and those that abused me. I did it for myself, because the thing I'm the most proud of is I can say I survived the extreme sexual and physical abuse. I'm lucky to be alive. But not only that, and being able to forgive, that was a gift that I gave myself, because I did not allow the maltreatment to change the core essence of who I was. I did it for me. I didn't do it for them. They don't deserve it. I'm looking at my parents. They don't deserve my forgiveness, but I've given it to them for me. I'm giving them for my children. So that's where my position is. And that's why the condition of forgiveness is the truth. So.
Yeah, I can relate to that, Penelope. For me, like, I think I had to, you know, forgive and let go, because I had spent so many years, not even so many years, I think I spent most of my life angry, hating. Like, I believe I was 8 years old when I was writing, nobody takes this and run with it, but I was 8 years old when I was really writing and premeditating the murder of my abuser, which was my uncle. Like, I had a whole plan on how that I was going to murder him. And, like, I was so angry and so hurt, and it busted out as in where I was taking, you know, razors and I was cutting my wrist because I was so hurt. I was so broken. And I just want to say a trigger warning. I do not want to trigger anyone. So I just want to say this is my story and the things that I overcame. And so I spent so many years, especially my young adult years, even my adolescent years, where I was looking for love in just all the wrong places, trying to find release in, you know, the drugs, and trying to find release in, you know, being sexually active. And so what I realized was that for me, I had to do some type of forgiving, not for them, but for me. Because I already knew what it felt like being angry, being wanting to destroy them, wanting to, you know, to, like, really hurt them because they hurt me. Like, I was angry with my mother. Like, how could you not protect me? You were in the other room. Like, how did you not hear me, or how did you not see anything? But all you came up with was that, oh, she was a troubled child. And so part of, you know, this process of me healing was saying that, oh, you could not handle the daughter that you had, like, not even handle, but you didn't know the worst that I was. Like, you had no idea the gem or the beauty that I had inside of me, but all you knew how to do was to destroy me. And I want to just encourage all the survivors that's on the call right now is that a lot of times the people that were supposed to, you know, what we say, love us, to care for us, they didn't know how to love you because you were so powerful, that you were so great, that you were so amazing. And so they tried their best to destroy you, to keep you down, to push you down, to beat you down, to do everything they could. But guess what? You are still here. You might be bruised a little. You might be hurting a little. It might hurt a lot, but they could not destroy that light that was inside you or that beauty that was inside you. So for me, forgiveness and letting go, it was something that it was a process of doing. I'm not going to say it was just like, oh, I forgive you and I'm going to be right back in your face. Absolutely not. I wouldn't dare be to you. And I think, like you said earlier, Penelope, is that people use forgiveness and they have these wording towards it. Just because I forgive you doesn't mean I have to talk to you. Just because I'm moving forward doesn't mean I have to be in your space or in your environment. Absolutely not. You hurt me. And I don't have to do nothing. I don't have to be around you. I don't have to speak to you. I don't have to try to validate you in any type of way. You hurt me. That's my memory of you. That is my state of you. Like, that's who you are to me, the person that hurt me. And I have a right to feel the way I feel. And you can take it, or you can leave it alone.
Yeah.
But I have a right. But far as being upset with you and letting you control, like, any emotion, or being around you, being in family gatherings with you, I don't have to. I don't need to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm nodding my head as what you're saying, because exactly. I mean, the forgiveness is conditional in terms of I have to stick to my boundaries. And my boundaries are that, you know, my forgiveness isn't cheap. It's not cheap. It comes with a price. And the price mm-hmm. is the truth. And the price is boundaries. And the price is, you know, me loving myself enough to have those boundaries and to stick to those boundaries. And truth is me not being able to go back to my family home because it's too painful. And that's the truth. It's a house of horrors for me. That is, and for the forgiveness for me, it's definitely, it's contingent on truth. And it's other thing that you said is that it is hard. And I, alluding to what Annie said, this is not easy, you know, acknowledging and the process of forgiveness, even if it's just that you're working on self-forgiveness, this is hard, rough, gnarly stuff. It was not easy. And you know what Annie had said, and it slightly triggered me, but it's true. I mean, my father died almost 5 years ago. Literally, his last words to me, he never stopped abusing me. His last words to me were, in essence, "You'll never be worth being believed." Wow. And so I understand that. And it is, like I said, it is just, the forgiveness was for me. It was for me. I was able to give him something he could never give himself. His treatment of me will not define who I am. You know, I'm not going to allow that to definition of how he treated me, what he thought of me. I'm not going to become that person. I'm not going to become my parents. So that is also a condition of forgiveness. But it is exceptionally hard to forgive. And like I said, mine is definitely conditional. It's conditional. It's conditional on everything that I just mentioned.
Yeah. And I'm holding my heart right now because, you know, human beings can be so wicked. Like, they can be horrible. And so I'm holding my heart for you, Penelope and Annie, because it's just like, because you was a sucky person, because you was a horrible, and if I really wanted to say what I really wanted to say, it wouldn't be good for air, but you was just this person that was just a hot mess, evil. And because, you know, you couldn't see who I truly was, so you had to do everything in your power to try, even on your deathbed, to try to destroy me. So I'm holding my heart for both of you because, you know, just hearing your voice and just hearing your story, I know that not only that you have impacted me in my life, but I've known that there's someone in your life that sees you and like, I love Annie because she's just who she is and she brights up my day. Or, you know, Penelope, I love hearing her voice, or because she brightens up my day. And I think those are the things that I love about being a survivor, because it's something about, you know, our resilience and our power and our strength that, you know, when someone meets us, they find something that they love about us, and they begin to learn and know how to treat us and, you know, have respect for us and value us and hear us. So, yeah, I think I'm talking a lot.
No, well, there are words that, I don't know about Annie, but there are words that I definitely needed to hear today. But Annie, what are your thoughts?
I wanted to comment on what Felicia said, that she was so amazing that they couldn't, I don't know exactly what you said, but they couldn't deal with you because you were so amazing they had to break you. And I totally identify with that because my dad even told me that my mother was jealous of me, and that's why she was so mean to me. And I was like 20 when he told me that, but I could see it. I can see it all the way back. And I think she was jealous of me because my dad was sexually abusing me. You know, I think that probably happens to people. She was a terrible person anyway. Screaming maniac and narcissist. So, and she knew about it and she didn't stop it. So, oh, well, let's see. Well, I wanted to say my anger is not gone. Go ahead.
No, this is why, for me, this is why I love these shows. Not because of what I'm hearing, the content of what we're hearing, but because I completely, 100% understand how hard it is, because the same thing happened to me. The same thing happened to me. How do you forgive a mother that looks the other way, that knows what's happening right before her very eyes? And looks the other way. How do you, how do you even justify that? I mean, as a child, right? It's a mother's job is to protect, a father's job, caregiver, anybody bound to children. We're all bound to children to love and protect them. And how do you forgive the unforgivable? It's so hard. It's so raw. And I'll never stop grieving it. Conversation with a family member today, who's sort of, I don't know, she's a little neutral, right? She's very torn, right, between the toxicity of those that don't want to speak the truth and of those that are healing. How do you, I'm getting totally I'm almost dissociating right now because it's so painful to just even talk about that. How do you ever come to terms with that? It's almost impossible to even articulate pain of that, and you just you mentioning it, Annie, totally can relate to that. I know how that feels. And I struggle with it. I still struggle with it. I feel like I'm grieving it. It's a grief. That's why I say it's a grief that will never, ever, ever go away. I'll never understand how someone can hurt a child and neglect a child in that manner. Ever.
Right? Absolutely.
Even self-forgiveness. I still feel guilty even saying what I'm saying right now on the air. You know, I feel, oh, what if they heard what I was saying? There, it's still, that's why it's just a daily, daily grind.
Yeah.
To have to myself. It's okay. You can speak your truth. That's part of forgiveness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bringing it up. It's okay to say it. Say to Annie, I totally hear you. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you, Penelope. It is, it's hard work. It hurts, very hurtful. And I think that's why these spaces, they're so important, because we're able, to relate to one another, able to, hear one another and say, you've been through some painful stuff, but you're not alone. I got you. You're not alone. And so, my heart is for you. Like, that's what I love about these spaces. And, I cannot get enough of being around other survivors because of the beauty and the strength that people and individuals like Annie and Penelope, because we need these spaces. We need one another, especially when the tough days and the rough days. And so I would love to ask Annie or you, Penelope, what are some things that you kind of do when you're, in, a funk, or you feel like, I'm in, this just have one of those days? What are those things that, you enjoy doing? Whether, if it's staying in your bed and just, just sleeping, what are those things that you do that helps you say, I just need some time or a moment to get out of this? What are some things that you do? And for me, I'll go first. For me, I love, because I live in Miami, I drive to the beach, and I kind of just let, my feet go in the sand and my toes move around in the sand, and I just kind of listen to the waves and the wind, and that kind of get me out of those days where I'm like, I am not having a good day, I'm not okay, but being here gives me somewhat of a peace and a moment of, okay, I got this. What is those things for you, Annie or Penelope?
I'll go, Penelope.
Okay. I'll go.
Okay.
In all honesty, I go to Cold Stone. I got a Cold Stone ice cream. I have my favorite ice cream. It is Mud Pie Mojo. I get a Levitt size and a waffle cone, and I walk around the mall, and I eat it. This is my affordable luxury. And
ice cream.
I get to shop. I get to shop. I wear my mask, so I'm eating it. And it's just like nurturing and self-care, and I just say, okay, go get your favorite little ice cream. I was not allowed to eat sweet in the home. We were restricted food. I give myself that grace. So it's a small thing, but I swear I always feel so much better after I do it, the things that I do. I'll call into a show, or I'll listen to a show. I'll listen to one of my shows. I've done my own story 3 times. And for me, it's hard to listen sometimes. It also reminds me that it takes a lot of courage and guts to, tell your own story. That I have it in me. I remind myself that I'm strong. or I listen to somebody else's story. But NASA, it truly, those tools and those archive shows really help.
Yeah.
I mean, Annie, you know, made mention she takes notes, and I take notes on shows that I go back to and listen. So, but I'd like to hear what Annie does.
Okay. Well, my first thing to do is go outside and get some sunshine. Sunshine really helps me a lot when I'm feeling low. And I live in California, so it's pretty nice every day, so I can do that. And another thing I do is I put on samba music and dance.
Oh.
It's just a gentle kind of happy music with a nice beat to it. It's not in English, so I can't sing along, so it, like, frees my mind of all the words, you know, that run through your mind when you're hearing songs. Well, it's in Portuguese, so I don't know what they're saying. And let's see, what else do I pet my cat. That's a good thing when I'm feeling low. I'll pet my cat.
That's nice. I love it.
And sometimes I'll drive to the beach in my little convertible. That makes me happy.
Mm. Ooh, that's a nice drive. A convertible drive to the beach.
17 minutes to get to the beach.
I'm kind of jealous over here, Annie. You're driving to the beach in a convertible with the wind in your hair? Okay.
That's right. Playing samba.
I love it. So those moments that we all just mentioned, like, I think they're so powerful and so needed, because that gives us that extra push that we need, you know. And I love, you know, I'm still thinking about Annie driving in this convertible to the beach, you know. I'm feeling some type of way, but, you know, we're going to leave that alone. But you have to have, if you're listening, if you have to have something that you do that, you know, gets you excited, that makes you feel good, like you're not thinking about no one else, but to make you feel better. And it's so important. I think that is that process of, you know, forgiving yourself, learning yourself, rediscovering yourself, finding yourself, because you get to find those things that maybe you once lost, or some, and you rediscover it and you're like, oh, I remember that I enjoy doing this. I love this. I love going to the beach. You know, I love, you know, getting ice cream. Like, and I think those things are so very important. So, Penelope, do you have anything to say, or Annie?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they are important. And I think, you know, sometimes, to your point, sometimes something small can make a big impact. It doesn't have to be a big gesture. I mean, I also like to hike. We have hiking trails right by my house, and I always love to connect with nature. And I also love to do yoga and meditation, or I even have coffee with a girlfriend just to get a change of scenery. But it doesn't have to be a big thing. Sometimes a little bit of self-improvement, what I mean by that is, like, you know, paint my toenails or clean out a drawer in my kitchen. That might sound like a small thing, but I've noticed that if I take action and I can accomplish something, it does help, even if it's small. So, and I learned that. I used to think, you know, I think because of my own childhood, I felt like I always had to prove myself. I had to prove that I was worthy. I had to prove that I was worth loving. They had to be these huge, grand things. I had to get up on a big stage to be seen and acknowledged. And, of course, I never was. When I realized in my healing that it was a very long process to realize something that's pretty simple, is that small things can go a long way in the healing process when you're having a day where you're really struggling. And I have a lot of those days still. Admittedly.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the journey, Penelope, is like, we're going to have bad days. If anybody tell you that, oh, you're always going to be awesome, perfect, peaches and cream, cupcakes and rainbows, you should run. Like, you should run, because, you know, we're going to have days that, you know, that are not so great, you know? That's why we need, you know,
people like Annie and Penelope that we can, you know, get on a call and say, hey, you know, I'm down right now. Can you, you know, talk to me, or can you hear me talk, or and just listen, or even finding those things, you know, that we enjoy to kind of, you know, not give us just a quick picker-upper, basically. And so it's like I feel that we're on this journey, and it's a lifetime journey. It's not a moment, but we're always going to have, you know, moments where we have memories of our flashbacks, our triggers, and we have to find those tools or find those things that's going to say, hey, I'm not going to stay stuck where this memory is happening, or I'm not going to stay stuck in that pain or hurt, but I realize that it is part of the journey, and it's okay. Like, don't ever feel like, oh, I'm having a bad day. Man, I'm such a horrible person. Absolutely not. This is part of the journey. This is part of the process of, you know, overcoming, moving forward, and just the whole recovery process. And I think Penelope said earlier in the call that, you know, we never get truly over it, but we will have moments where, you know, we still have memories where it hurts, where we grieve it. And that's perfectly normal. It's okay. It's okay. So I just want to encourage you on that. Like, it's okay to not be okay. I know we all have heard that saying that it is okay to not be okay.
Exactly. I know, to your point, I think it's an important one. Just because we have our rougher days doesn't mean that we're not healing. I mean, it's part of the deal. And to me, I actually sometimes remind myself, being dissociated, being numb, right? I was in a dissociative state for such a long time. You don't feel those things, right? Because I was numb. I was completely in denial. I had repressed memories. So as much as a cliche that it sounds, it may sound, but to me, the pain of feeling those feelings is part of my healing journey, and it tells me that it's progress. Grief is progress, and I always have to remind myself about that. And also, to your point, Felicia, I agree. You're never healed, right? I've heard people say, I have, you know, totally healed. That's like, for me, it's like saying, no one's normal. Like, who gets to define normal? I mean, give me a person that's, you know, what is normal? None of it. We all are subjected to the human condition. Like, nobody's normal, I'm sorry. And so, you know, I feel like the same thing. Like, no one gets completely healed. We're all works in progress.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I agree with you that no one's normal. No one is. I absolutely agree with you.
And I mean, I hope I haven't offended anybody by saying that, but I mean, I think you can try to hit, you know, different levels of wellness. You can try and, you know, be more moderate, you know, in terms of wellness, and we can always be working on that. But I just think, you know, normal or perfect is just not possible. It's not attainable. You know, we can try and be more adjusted. We can try and work on things, growth, you know, self-growth. But I that's my own personal opinion. I just think part of trying to be normal and trying to be perfect was part of my survival, right? But actually acknowledging that I can't be part of my healing.
Yeah, can relate with that. That was really, I think that was an unhealthy behavior for me as well, was just, you know, trying to act like everything was all right, everything was good, trying to have this sense of perfection. And that was, like, more draining than anything. And I love what you said, is that we all should have, like, a level of, you know, of growth or progress or wellness, because I feel like that is so important. You want to have some type of, you know, a peace in your life, or a sense of, you know, I'm safe. I feel like everyone is deserving of that, of where I'm now in a safe place or at a peaceful place. And just a quick story was that, you know, this year, you know, I was like, I'm going to be so intentional with, you know, my time, my energy, the goals that I want to achieve this year. And I've really been, like, at a very good place, right? And so one thing that I realized, it was like nothing's going wrong. Like something bad should be happening. And something should be wrong right now, but it's not. Everything is good. Why am I so happy, or why am I so peaceful? And then I realized that because how I grew up, right? I grew up, my young adult years, it was always like this survival mode, this goal, like protect yourself, fight for yourself, that mode of, you know, trying to protect me. And I was in that mode for so many years. I can honestly say that this year was like my first year where I was like, oh my goodness, I'm at a good place. Is this what peace feel like? Is this what wellness, progress feels like? Because I feel good. Am I saying that I don't have bad days? I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that I'm not in a mode of fighting for myself or protecting myself or not trying to defend myself, but I'm at a place of this is who I am. In spite of all that has happened to me, in spite of all that has hurt me and broke me, like, this is who I am, and I'm okay.
Well, it's a beautiful place of contentment, which is amazing. I'm just smiling. I want to hear from Annie, if you don't mind. Annie, I want to hear from you on this.
Well, I really like No One Is Normal. I used to be in a group where we'd call people normies if they had not been sexually abused as children. And but people who haven't been sexually abused as children have other issues, and they're not normal either. You know, everybody has some kind of issues, especially those ACEs, those adverse childhood experiences. A lot of people have those, and that messes with them. But I like the idea of saying, okay, I'm flawed. Maybe I'm damaged. Maybe bad things happen to me, but this is who I am today with all the pockmarks on me. And I'm okay. I'm okay now. Yeah, I've got a past that was ugly, but I'm okay now. And this day is good, and I am optimistic.
I like that, normies.
Yeah.
I've heard you say that before, but I do like that. And I have to acknowledge it. You know, sometimes I get jealous. Like, I look at people that have, you know, not had some of these struggles, or that I perceive haven't had them, that weren't abused as children, that haven't had to go through this journey, and I look at what they've accomplished, you know. And sometimes I felt like, you know, what could I have done, you know, if I had had a normal upbringing, what more could I have accomplished? I have to admit, I've had those feelings before towards the normies, but, you know, then I realized, this was God's path for me. You know, this is what I was born into, and it's been God's path. And I have to just not think about what I didn't have, but I have to focus on what I do have and what I have done. You know, but I will acknowledge that there are days when, you know, I do lament, I do grieve that loss. So I guess it's the one other way to put it, that I didn't, you know, my loss was that I never was able to have I will never be able to call myself a normie.
Oh, goodness, Penelope, I can absolutely relate with, you know, having a jealousy towards people that never went through anything. Like, I was like, well, if I had this type of life, I would be much better off. Like, I really would have. And then I think I kind of got over it because I was like, but they don't know, they don't have like this wisdom. Like, okay, so I'm make sure that you guys understand me. People that did not go through anything, they don't have a certain sense of a wisdom of what I call the post-traumatic trauma wisdom, or that post-traumatic growth wisdom is where, you know, when you have been through adversities, you've been through abuse or trauma, and you overcame it, you came through it, right? And so when anything in your life happens, you're able to look at that situation was like, oh, this ain't nothing. I've been through worse. and so when you're able to have that, you know, that moment of, oh, yeah, that's when life's happening, it's like, oh, this happened to me. Like, that doesn't mean nothing to me. This doesn't faze me. I got this because what? I've been through worse. I've overcame worse, and look, I'm still here. You think this is about to scare me or run me? No, absolutely not. Am I saying that, you know, it might not hurt or bother you? No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that you have a certain wisdom, a certain outlook of saying, look, I've been through worse. If that did not kill me or break me, you know, I got this. And I hope you, y'all understood what I was saying. So, yeah.
I think absolutely. I think, you know, to use that, you know, the fact that we have, at least for me, that I have survived what I consider the, you know, insurvivable. I did survive, and I am strong. I do have a strength. That was, you know, an effect of the maltreatment, as I do have a strength. Some is physical strength, some is emotional strength, some is just the quality of empathy. It's helped mold me into kind of mother that I am, kind of work that I do. I mean, I'm not thankful for the abuse, but it's definitely, to your point, I mean, it has that post-traumatic, I think, what was the term you used, Felicia? Post-traumatic
wisdom.
Wisdom, yeah. There has been that aspect of it. And Annie, I'm just curious to what Annie's thoughts are on that.
Well, I think that's a really amazing concept, post-traumatic wisdom. It's true. I feel I'm wise in a lot of things that other people might not see because of what I've been through. And also the idea that, okay, go ahead, throw it at me. I can take it because I can take just about anything, and I already have, you know. So I'm strong. I'm invincible. You can't hurt me anymore. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. You think you can scare me? Ha, ha, ha. You can't scare me.
I love it.
No. Yeah, well, that's the strength. Is knowing that, you know, there are boundaries as to what can even scare me. I love that, Annie.
Yeah.
So with that, that post-traumatic wisdom, I really do like that myself. I love that. I do love that concept. And that's the beauty in healing. That's the hope. I think that that's a lot of, that comes with healing is all of those nuggets we've been discussing.
Yeah. I think that's amazing. I'm excited for just, you know, just the surviving and just meeting other survivors, you know, the beauty and the strength. Like, I don't care about what other people have to say, but I think the most awesome thing is, or awesome person is a trauma survivor. I don't care what nobody says. I said it. Felicia said it. The most awesome person in the world is someone that survived trauma, any type of trauma. So that's just what I believe, and I'm going to stick to that. That's my story. That is my story.
I have found the most inspiration from the people that I met through NAFSCA and adult survivors of child abuse. You know, those that are here are the ones that want to be, those that are on the circuit, as I call it. They're writing the books, you know, we're doing the show. Even small things, you know, those that are have the courage to start the healing journey. And you know, you don't have to have a title behind your name or a book title behind your name or anything to have that title or have that label. But, you know, for me, anyone who has had the courage to embark on that journey has really inspired me and really helped me along the way. Completely.
Yeah.
Completely. And giving me more, yeah. it gives me permission. It just every time I listen to a show, every time I talk to someone, you know, it helps me heal. It gives me permission. When I hear their stories, to, you know, to nod my head, you know, to be able to align with what is being shared with me. And it helps, and it helps in that, you know, that growth of that journey, you know, to continue along the way.
I love it, Penelope. And you said a key word for me, permission. It gives me permission to heal. Give me permission to heal. That, I don't know how, if y'all heard that, but that word is so powerful. Giving yourself permission to, you know, be heard, to heal, to be valued, to be seen. Giving yourself permission to be loved. Giving yourself permission to be all that, you know, you choose to be or you decide to be. And saying, I choose this for me, and I give myself permission. Whatever I might think of, like, I give myself permission to be. I love that word, permission, because we have basically had our choices taken and snatched from us. Many of us have. And when we're able to say no, or stand up for ourselves, or say yes to something, and use our voice and say, I'm giving myself permission to be person. I think it's the most powerful thing ever, because we've had so many people tell us, do this, or I'm going to take this from you. But when we say, I give myself permission, man, that you don't use a key word and you don't even know it, Penelope. permission. Like, give yourself permission. So, yeah.
And yeah,
I love
it. I mean, and thank you, because that's part of my healing, too, is that I never had permission. I wasn't allowed to, you know, do anything. I wasn't allowed to show that I was hurting. You know, I wasn't allowed to even have the childhood manifestations that came with the abuse, you know. I wasn't allowed permission for anything. I wasn't allowed permission to have a voice or to speak or to be safe or to tell anyone. And so I guess, yeah, to your point, it's empowering to allow yourself to have that permission for sure. And I gave myself permission for something pretty significant, a sibling. And I finally said, you know, I give myself permission to speak the truth. And I said, we were talking about my father's passing. He will have been, we're coming up 5 years since my father's passing. And I gave myself permission to say, you know, the truth. There were things that I remember about him that were good memories, but there are a lot of horrible memories in my heart. And I gave myself permission to say, I can live a more peaceful life now that he's not here. And that was huge for me to say that to the point. But I gave myself permission to say it. And actually, I gave my sibling permission to acknowledge that they had felt that way too. Even though that sibling was also a betrayal to acknowledge that feeling. I didn't feel it was a betrayal. I felt it was the truth. And I, you know, as it is. I don't see truth as a betrayal.
Oh, absolutely not. Truth is truth.
Mm-hmm.
Truth is truth.
I don't know. What do you think, Annie?
Well, regarding giving myself permission to heal, I totally have given myself and continue to give myself permission to heal. I don't know if I've given myself permission to be loved yet. I think I love myself now, but I'm not ready to have someone else love me that way anymore. I don't think I'll ever need to have anyone else love me because I love myself now completely. And I gave myself permission to publicly expose my father, which was big. That was really big, to put my last name on a book about incest and say, yeah, my father incested me. And not only outing him, but outing myself so that everyone in the universe who cared to know would know that I was a victim as a child. So I gave myself permission to do that and to be that person who will speak publicly about having been abused in that way.
I admire your strength, Annie, and I love it. I love it. You gave your permission to yourself permission to expose because it needed to be exposed. As well as I think you said this. You said, I give myself permission to heal and continue to give my permission to heal. I love that because I think that is the main key, is continually to give yourself permission. So thank you for sharing, Annie. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only did you give yourself permission, but that to me that's healing, right? To let the world know your truth. You gave not only so many other people permission to acknowledge it. But for me, one thing that keeps me up at night, Annie, is were there other victims? You know, who else? And I think, to me too, someone that I could speak to about what happened to me, you know, in terms of the molestation, that would have been, like, way in the lottery. It would have been such a gift. Because that keeps me up at night, you know, whether I'm the victim. And so you've given to me, there's just such a gift in everything that you've done with writing about what happened to you from your father. You know, it's a true act of generosity and love. And we have to remind ourselves of that because so many that don't want the truth to come out there so much differently still want to. I have found in my own experience.
I'm enjoying this conversation. I really am enjoying and loving this conversation. I think these are the conversations that are so needed and heartfelt and continuously need to be, you know, talked about because there's so many other individuals, you know, that, you know, we don't know that they don't have their voice. And so for us to have, you know, this type of space to say, hey, you know, you're not alone, this is what I enjoy the most about, you know, talking trauma and talking about recovery and healing and just all that good stuff, because I think these are the type of topics and conversations that need to be talked about, that need to be on mainstream. But you know, they will never be mainstream because this is not a sexy topic. This is not, you know, the hot topic. You know, we're exposing things. We are bringing things to the light, like, you know, Annie said, like she exposed some things. And so that's why we have to continue to have these conversations and begin to talk about those things that are not sexy.
Yeah, we do.
I agree.
Absolutely.
I think the more we talk about it, the less it will happen.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you there, Annie.
Absolutely. And the more people that will begin to heal and be allowed to heal, the more they begin that process. I mean, I had not joined NASCA before I was in therapy, very, very intensive cognitive behavioral therapy, and over 2.5 years before I was ever able to speak of what happened to me in terms of being molested. And I thought that the pain of bringing up that memory was so painful. I did not know how I would survive it. And I had a great, you know, therapist, psychologist, PhD in psychology, very smart, but felt like he couldn't totally understand because he'd never experienced what I experienced. And then when I found NASCA, you know, I was looking for a support group. There wasn't one that was a local support group that I could go to recovery. I found NASCA, and I just found a community of people where stood, right? They understood, they'd walked in similar shoes. And I had this permission to finally align. You know, I didn't feel crazy. I didn't feel alone. I felt like there were people out there that could understand what the experience was like. And that was huge. It was really, really huge. So I think that that's also the gift of just sharing.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with do you deal with guilt of when we set those boundaries with toxic family members that refuse to acknowledge the truth, and there's an event in the family, like a death in the family, like a parent or a sibling, how do you deal with you know, setting that boundary on what is right for you, you know, in terms of whether you go back into the family, you know, of origin unit during an event or not. How do you deal with that? Just curious.
Annie, would you like to go first?
Hello?
Annie, did we lose you?
Annie?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I had muted. I'm sorry. I'm going through that right now because there's been a death in the family. My brother's partner of 37 years passed away. And so all three of the sisters, I'm one of the three sisters, we all came to Florida, actually, to be here for him. And that was wonderful. And being with my brother is wonderful because he is just wonderful. But my sisters are another thing entirely. I was accused of being fat and wrinkled and old and having ugly hair. All these things were said to me. And I was pretty calm about it, just watching, knowing, okay, that's coming from, it's nothing to do with me. Those comments have nothing with me, that's them. But I can see a lot of my parents in their behavior. It's like they didn't grow out of it yet. I wonder if they see that in me too. Probably. I probably have behaviors of my parents too. But the meanness, the picking on me, meanness,
that was so my mother.
I can relate to that.
Yeah.
It's tough, isn't it? It's tough. It's just so hard, Annie. I feel for you. That's just really, really hard. Not as to me, it's just, again, you know, it's just an area of discomfort, you know, in terms of healing, in terms of navigating those types of situations. Very difficult. And I don't think that there are easy answers either.
Yeah.
Unless we should have
yeah.
You, I don't have any.
No, it is not an easy answer, because it's just when it comes to family and just that family dynamic, and it's a whole, like, triangle, whole, it's just a whole, you know, different aspect, and it goes different ways, because, you know, we're expected that, you know, our family is supposed to, you know, love us, care, support us, all that good stuff. But sometimes our family members are, they're the most horrible people we know. Like, they're horrible, and they're evil. And so it's like, I always think about, it's like, just because we're blood, like, that don't mean nothing. Because if you treat me like crap, that means I'm really not your family. I have met people that are no kin, no, not related, and they have treated me so much better than my family members have. And mm-hmm. I can relate with, you know, there has a point in my time in my life where I felt like, you know, my biological mom had, you know, 3 children. I'm the oldest of all my mom's kids, but I'm the one who experienced the physical abuse, the sexual abuse, the neglect, and all that. And she raised, you know, my other 2 siblings. And I always, growing up, I always felt like, you know, some weird way that my, you know, my memory or my reference of my mother was not the same as for them. And they will always say, oh, my mom went through a lot and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, yeah, right. What did she go through? Like, really? What did she really go through? She didn't go through nothing. She probably put herself in some situations. But I always felt bad that I had this evil, you know, reference of her, because that's what I thought of her. She was evil. She was hurtful. She was just a horrible mother. That's my reference of her, and that's Penelope said it, like, that was my truth. My truth was she was a horrible mother. She was present when, you know, that was happening to me, to her oldest child. And so when we would have conversations, me and my siblings, they're like, oh, well, why won't you call mom? Like, I'm not going to call mom because she's not my mom. She's your mom. And they were like, oh, that's wrong. And it was a guilt went over me. But when I got in this healing process, in this healing journey, I stopped caring what they thought. Like, I don't care what you think, because my reference of her is not, my reference of her is my reference of her. Your reference of her, your mother, is your reference of your mother. And I can say whatever my truth is and who she was and what I saw from her. You might saw something different because you was there as her child that she wanted to put the pieces back together or whatever that may be. But I did feel guilty. I felt guilty for a long time because when I was around my biological family, it made me feel like, oh, am I wrong for feeling this way, or is it something wrong with me? And then I realized there's absolutely nothing wrong with me. So, yeah, I understand that.
But it's hard to be demonized. I think that is something that I still struggle with. Especially, you know, for me, when it comes to your family of origin and siblings, you know, you can tell a friend, I mean, you can tell a therapist, you can tell your priest what life was like, but your siblings, your parents, they were all there. You know, we were all living. Now, our experiences with our parents or with relatives in the home might be slightly different, but we all lived in that same world. You know, we were all there. And if, for me, if anybody should understand, especially if they witnessed it, they should. And they're the one people that can actually account for the fact that it happened because they were there and they saw it. And when you don't, and when you're faced with saw it firsthand, that saw the truth, that know the truth, dispute it, you know, for me, it's very difficult because they're the very people that should believe you and should understand it and should be able to validate that. I mean, it's been a process to understand that and accept that I have to just, you know, I can't wait for that validation if I feel.
Yeah, so it is hard. It can be hard, especially if they're attacking you. Like, I can, like, imagine like that can be just extremely hard because of who they are. And so when they're doing that attack thing and trying to belittle you, it hurts like heck. It hurts like heck. And my thing, like, is for, like, them, is, like, their, you know, their perspective is, like, you were there, but instead of, you know, sticking up for me, you rather just side with, for me, I would say, you side with the enemy, you side with the victimizer. Like,
mm-hmm.
It was okay. And so I know it's painful. I know it's hurtful, but that's why I be like so quick. I think this was part of my healing process because I just began to get like this was that, oh, I'm protecting myself for all means. Like from you, like my biological family, I have a certain boundary that I don't have for anyone else because I know they can be hurtful. That I know that they can be hateful. Like, I do not play, like, I am so, like, serious when it comes to my boundaries and my peace and protecting me when it comes to my family because I know that they see me like I see them. Like, I see them as an enemy, and they see me as somebody that is what I call is breaking through the BS that they try to portray because I know who they really are.
Mm-hmm. Annie, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, family. My thoughts are that I have a family choice now. I have a couple of people who I've chosen to be close to. People who understand where I've been, people who've been where I've been, and people who are, like, supportive of me and want me to do well. It's so unusual instead of wanting me to fail, you know? So I try to stay away from anybody who's abusive to me, like verbally abusive. Oh, I'm not going to talk to them. I'm just not going to talk to them anymore. That way I won't be abused. But the family of choice, that's the way to go with people who share your values and behave nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly. And we were talking about that earlier. It's the people that become your family are, for me, at least in my experience, are not the people that I'm related to by blood. You know, some of them are, but a lot of them are not. A lot of them are people that I've chosen to bring, you know, and I've chosen to, right? It has to be useful. We've become family through, and that's the beauty of choice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So believe it or not, we're less than 5 minutes left of the show. It just seems to me like it's flown by. I've really thoroughly enjoyed our topic. It's a tough topic, but Felicia, what a great job you've done just bringing these topics to light and asking questions and really facilitating this discussion. We've covered so much tonight, I feel. It's just a great show, but with several minutes left, I just want to know if you have anything to, you know, closing comments to leave us with as we talk about the Sacred Gems forgiveness and healing and everything that comes with it.
Yeah. I just want to thank Naska and Penelope and Annie for just allowing me to share space with them. You know, I always enjoy coming on and just talking with the host of that night. And so I'm thankful and, you know, I'm always grateful to just be amongst other survivors that are taking it one day at a time. They are overcoming and they're giving themselves permission to heal. One thing that I would love to leave you guys with is that, you know, I really believe that you are deserving of a life where you are just 100%, I mean, but progressing in everything that, you know, you inspire or you desire for your life, whatever that may look like for you, that you have the ability to give yourself one permission to enjoy that life and to choose it for yourself. Whether that looks like if you forgive, whether that looks like if you say, hey, I'm about to air you out and I'm about to tell you about yourself. And or even just saying, hey, I'm doing this for me. I'm choosing me. And I would want to leave you with just choose you. Choose you in everything in life. Choose you because you're deserving of everything that is good, everything that is peaceful, everything that is hope. You're deserving of it. I don't care what anyone says. You are deserving of a life beautifully lived after trauma. So I'm Felicia. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well, how profound statements and so articulately stated and well, you know, well summarized. And this show, and Felicia, I just knew you would, you know, you're so amazing that I'm a survival professional, that we would have a great show. I just knew it. And we've really talked a lot. You know, we've talked a lot about, and within the context of forgiveness, you know, to intervention, prevention, and recovery, really, from childhood abuse. We've brought a lot of topics to light. But we've also talked about the beauty in it, you know, the beauty in all these experiences, these painful experiences, and we've offered hope and healing in this conversation. It's just been a great, great show. It's just really, really enveloped everything within the mission of NASCAR. So I really wish to thank you. I wish to thank my co-host, Annie. I wish to thank everybody who's listening in, who's streaming. The show archived in about 30 minutes. So if you'd like to find it, I suggest going on to the NASCAR website, which is naasca.org. From the front page, see our current show schedule, and from there you can also go and look and buy our shows. They are archived, and you can listen to them again and again. They're there for your free as a resource. Also, you will see we do have 3 group recovery meetings a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I believe it's on Sunday. That is also on the front page of the website, the information for those group recovery. So please go check out the NASCAR website. And, of course, we are a fully nonprofit 501c3, so make a donation through PayPal if you wish. And at the end of the show, I always like to say, it's all of our responsibility to keep our children safe. There are enough adult eyes on this planet to protect our children. So if you see something, please say something. It is our moral responsibility. So I wish to thank Felicia Johnson for coming on tonight. Thank you and good night.
Night.
Good night.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.